So tonight we are studying Judges. We're starting a study, and I think every Bible teacher feels like this. You study and you prepare, but you know you've only got a limited number of classes, and there's no way you can talk about every aspect of any book of the Bible that needs to be talked about. So somewhere you got to start, and that's what I do. And no matter where I start, I think I probably could have done better. But anyway, here we are. And maybe in the process of us studying Judges, you can raise your hand and say, what about this, Marty, and take us off. We'll chase a rabbit down a good rabbit hole if it's a good rabbit hole. You know how I am. Anyway, but take a look at this worksheet. Background and dates for the book of Judges. I didn't write this in there, but if you've read the book, you know this is one of the darkest, most turbulent periods in the history of the people of Israel. It is a mess. If it were made into a movie, it would not be for children. This is a bad time, and yet there are so many lessons from this piece of history we can learn. Background and dates. While the biblical record of ancient history has proven, the word you should put there is reliable. The record of ancient history has proven reliable against criticism. The critics come and the critics go, and they say, oh, the Bible's wrong about this, wrong about that, and then they'll uncover. It's almost as if God has allowed things to be hidden in the earth or in some storeroom of a museum that's not been researched yet until a criticism becomes popular, and then somebody finds that piece of that artifact. Oh, but wait, it says here that what the Bible claimed all along was right. And through the years, there have been a lot of those things that have happened that way. Uriah, what people was he from? You remember Uriah? He was a Hittite. It used to be said that there were no such people as the Hittites until they discovered in ancient Turkey artifacts that led them to more research, and they determined that the Hittites were at one time one of the greatest nations in the history of humanity. So, yeah, the Bible is reliable. It was not given to provide us with exact dates in every case. That's not what God was concerned with. There are, however, clues in the text that help us get a general idea for the time frame in which things recorded happened. And that's what we will find in this next part of the study. 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1. You want to go there? Take a look at it. What this is recording is the time when Solomon began work on the temple. Why Solomon? Why not David? I thought David was a man after God's own heart. Why did David not build the temple? Okay, God said you're a man of blood. I don't know that there's a way to determine exactly what God meant by that statement, whether it was murder or simple warfare, but he had shed blood, and apparently God did not want the builder of his temple to be associated with bloodletting, which is somewhat ironic, because what was going to happen at the temple day in and day out from morning to night? Bloodletting, the bloodletting of animals, but that's very different from the bloodletting of people. That ought to tell us something right there. David wanted to build a house for God. You remember back in our study of Samuel, when David went to God and said, I want to build a house for the tabernacle, what did God tell David in turn? I'm going to build you a house. And he wasn't talking about a physical building. He was saying, I'm going to build your house, your family line. There's going to be a king sitting on your throne from your loins. And of course, who was that going to be but Jesus Christ? So we've got that with David. And David laid up in store material for the building of the temple. Solomon comes along and he begins building it. But when he starts building it, this is what it says in 1 Kings chapter 6 and verse 1. Who's got that? I am sorry. Are you in 1 Kings or are you in Joshua? 1 Kings. 1 Kings 6:1. If I got the reference right, yeah.
In the 408th year after the people of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in
So what this is a record that tells us when the temple was beginning to be built, it was the fourth year of Solomon's reign, and how long after the Exodus? 480 years. Those who study things, history, dates, tell us that Solomon's reign began about 967. So that would put the date of the building of the temple, the beginning of the building of the temple, at what year? 963. If you're good at math. Well, even if you're not good at math, it's 963. So 963, and then you add 480 years to that, that takes you back to the Exodus. So everything we're going to be reading about in the Judges is taking place between those two dates. The Exodus, of course, and what happens after the Exodus? Why is there a 40-year gap in there? The Israelites said, we're chickens. We don't want to go into the promised land. We think something bad's going to happen to our children. And God says, all right, I'm going to let your worthless carcasses die in the wilderness, and I'm going to take your children in that you were so worried about. They're going to conquer Canaan, and that's exactly what happened. And then, of course, after the conquest of Canaan, at some point along the history, Joshua died, and chaos ensued. That's how that worked. So, back to B. 1 Kings 6:1 records that Solomon began building the blank temple in the fourth year of his reign, which was also the 480th year after the blank, the Exodus. And you can say Exodus. Exodus was a thing. It's also the name of a book, but the Exodus was exiting from Egypt. So it's the 480th year after the Exodus. Solomon ascended the throne about 967 B.C., so we are looking at around 1443 B.C. for the Exodus. Add to that the 40 years for the blank period. You could put wandering. I put desert because it was in the desert, and they weren't technically wandering. God was leading them. I'm going to lead you over here and let some of you die off, and then I'm going to lead you over there and let some of you die off, and then I'm going to lead you over there. So they weren't technically wandering. They were following the cloud, pillar of cloud, following the pillar of fire. It's okay if you call it a wandering, but it was in the desert. It was the desert period. And about 7 years for the blank, and that would be the conquest. They spent about 7 years conquering, quote-unquote, the promised land. I say quote-unquote because they didn't actually conquer everything that was supposed to be conquered. They didn't follow through as they should have. By the way, that's an interesting picture. Where'd that come from? Anybody know? Did Hal put that up there? That looks like where I go to hunt. Anyway, where I go through to hunt. I like that. We're getting closer all the time. Yeah, really. You ever had Himalayan possum? Yeah. You all heard of that, haven't you? I found Himalayan on the road. So, there was some movie, I forget what it was, a long time ago. It was a pretty good movie, but these guys were kind of homeless, kind of running from the law. And they're sitting at the campfire, and the guy offers the other ones some rabbit on a spit that's over the fire. It looked pretty good in the movie. And, oh, thanks. And he starts eating and says, how did you catch this rabbit? And he didn't say anything. You found him on the road, didn't you? Well, he was still warm. Anyway. Now, that might sound gross and vile. That's not close to what we're going to read about in Judges. So let's keep going. Following this, we're still in C. Following this, we have an unspecified period of time in which Joshua and his peers are gathered to their fathers. Because we don't know exactly how old Joshua was when he took over from Moses. If somebody figures that out, let me know, because I wasn't able to find it. Best guess is around 50 to 60, but nobody knows for sure. So Joshua and his peers are gathered to their fathers, and the next generation that blank, 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 that's from the text, did not know God. And that's huge. Why did they not know God? Well, they weren't there to experience everything that God had done for Israel, to see the miracles of the Exodus, but apparently those things had not been passed on to them either. They did not know God, nor the blank God had done for Israel. And that's right out of the text, the works God had done for Israel. By the way, this is coming from chapter 2, 6 through 10. This is the generation in which the narrative of the judges begins. This generation of people that didn't know God, they didn't know the works. And it lasts until the days of Samuel and God agreeing to Israel's demand for a king, as recorded in 1 Samuel 8. Go to Judges chapter 2. Now we can back up and read the first chapter, but this is important to get the feel for what this book is all about. I'll read the first five verses, and then I need somebody to pick up at verse... Well, actually, let's save the first five. We'll read those later. It sounds like I'm getting this all mixed up, but you'll see where we're going with this. I'll read verses 6 through 10, and then if somebody wants to pick up and read 11 through 15, who's got that? This is... Okay, Judy, this is Judges chapter 2, 11 to 15 is what Judy's going to be reading, and then 16... down through 19, who's got that? 16 through 19, anybody want to read? Okay, Shannon, and then who wants to pick up with 20 through 23? All right, Matt. Well, there's, you guys can fight over it, but y'all better clear out some space. Those boys could probably go at it. All right, here's the first part of chapter 2. Now, the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim. Now, I don't want you to miss the significance of this. Where did he come from? Gilgal. Gilgal was named Gilgal. Does your side reference have a note for what Gilgal means? It means a rolling. A rolling. It's not called that because of the topography of the place. It's called that because when Israel came out of Egypt, and all the non-believing generation had died off, they came into the promised land, and this place is called a rolling because they consecrated themselves to God and their sins were rolled away. So this is a place, he came from a place called the rolling away of sins, and he's coming up to Bochim, which got its name from what he's about to do. He said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land which I have sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars. But you've not obeyed me. What is this you've done? Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. When the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people lifted up their voices and wept. So they named that place Bochim, and there they sacrificed to the Lord. So what does Bochim mean? Weepers, you got it. What does Gilgal mean? The rolling away of sin, and now we got a place named Bochim because they are weepers. All right, 6 through 10. You're doing great.
I hit my phone and it went to another page.
Oh, yeah, you can't touch your phone, can you? That never happens with this one.
Oh, it does. who survived all the great work of the Lord he had done for Israel. Then Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And they buried him in the territory of his inheritance in Timnath Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel.
All right, verse 11. Shannon, was that you? Who's got it? Pick it up at 16. You next, Matt.
So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he said, because this people have transgressed my covenant that I commanded their fathers and have not obeyed my voice, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations that Joshua left when he died. In order to test Israel by them, whether they will take care to walk in the way of the Lord as their fathers did or not. So the Lord left these nations, not driving them out quickly, and he did not give them into the hand.
Right. Thank you all for reading. So who is it that comes and reprimands the people of Israel? The angel of the Lord reprimands them. Joshua dies. Who were his parents? Apparently he didn't have any. It says he was the son of Nun. Yeah, right. Nun was his dad's name, son of Nun, servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. They buried him in his inheritance, and then what happened? We talked about it, filled in some blanks. Another generation rose up that did not know God, nor the works that God had done. And this is where everything starts to go south. Verse 11. Sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. And what'd they do? How'd they do evil? They served the idols. Now, it doesn't go into detail why they did this, but if you do a little bit of research into the Ashtaroth and the Baals, and this is the way it was with a lot of ancient religious idolatry, it was very sensual. It was all about the idea, and even the Greeks and the Romans had this same kind of philosophy in their idolatrous worship. If you would do sensual things before the gods, they would reseed the crops. They would be aroused, if you will, and the crops and your animals and everything else would be fruitful and give birth and be flowering and produce. That was the idea of these ancient religions. And so you can imagine you're an Israelite And you're rubbing shoulders with these people, and hey, come on to our temple. We're going to have some fun tonight. We're going to party. We're going to drink and do all kinds of things. And you're going, well, I don't think, oh, come on. You want your crops to grow, don't you? Don't you want your cattle to have more cattle and your sheep to give birth to little lambs? And this is the way it goes here. And if you don't know God, if you don't know what God has done, there is the temptation. What's happening in our country right now? What was that? It's as if, you know, we read this and we read about the historical context. Well, this was 3,000 years ago, and nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. And if you are looking at some of the things people believe in today's culture, and you're going, how could they even think that that is right? And yet, are the Germans an intelligent people? Were they intelligent in 1939? Oh, yeah, very smart people. You look at some of the implements of war they designed. They had some excellent machinery for warfare, and they had some great plans. How about the Japanese? Those Japanese are smart. They've always been smart. And yet, both of these nations bought into evil. How many of you have heard of the book, The Rape of Nanking? Okay, one, The Rape of Nanking. If you're under 21, don't go find it. Now, that guarantees all these kids are going to go research that. The book is about what the Japanese did, the atrocities they committed when they invaded China and took a particular city named Nanking. And what happened there just reflected what they did all over the place. The way one nation conquers another is to first convince its soldiers that those people they're fighting against are not people like their people. They're different. And it was the same in this country. The Native Americans, they weren't real people. They were savages. But on the Native American side, we also know some of them were these white people. They're demons. It's the way it is in humanity, and it's the way it was here. It's what happened in the garden. The serpent said, God, He's not on your side. He's not with you. He's against you. He's your enemy. You need to fight him. And that's the way it happened there. And that's the way it's happening here. And that's the way it's happening now. And people are saying, if you're a Republican, if you're a conservative, there are people that think you should die. There are people that think you're a Nazi. Well, that's crazy, isn't it? But that's what people are thinking. And so, as we read these things, we're seeing history repeat itself in all of this. So the anger of the Lord burns against the people, and he gave them into the hands of plunderers. That's verse 14 of chapter 2. Gave them into the hands of plunderers. What's happening in our nation right now? Do we have any foreign people in our country who are plundering us? I read this and I think, is God punishing us? Is that why this is allowed to go on? And I don't know. I haven't gotten a letter from God. He didn't send me a memo. Hey, Marty, teach on Judges, because that's what I'm doing right now in America. But it sure looks like somewhat of a parallel. Right. There's a right way to think and there's a wrong way to think. And later on, when you get home, read the first chapter of Romans, especially when it gets down towards the latter half, and what Paul says about those who put God out of their minds. When you put God out of your mind, you become more animalistic, you do things that are abominable, and you get dumber and dumber and dumber. And that seems to me what's happening in America right now. All right, back to our worksheet. And you're going, finally, back to the worksheet. D, we're down to D. The first two kings were blank and blank. Saul and David. each of whom reigned for about, how many years? 40 years. Saul, 40 years. David, about 40 years. Which brings us to the time of, well, who's the next king after Saul and David? That's Solomon. Remember, it's in Solomon's day that he began to build the temple, and he gave us that time reference. It's like Solomon is the peg that we can drive in and say, we know where Solomon was. Took the throne in 967, and he said at that point, or it was recorded at that point, rather, not that he said it, but it was recorded that that was 480 years after what? The Exodus. So we can get a time frame for all of that. Now, E, Acts 13, 17 to 20, which is written out there below that. This text provides the Apostle Paul's recap and general timeline characterizing the Exodus to Samuel as a period of about 450 years, and that's right in the text. And you can read it with me. The God of the people of Israel chose our ancestors. He made the people prosper during their stay in Egypt with mighty power. He led them out of that country for about 40 years. He endured their conduct in the wilderness, and he overthrew seven nations in Canaan, giving their land to his people as their inheritance. All this took about 450 years, and after this, God gave them judges until the time of Samuel the prophet. So this is a general timeline for this period when we're looking at. F, for most of the period of the judges, the blank of God was set up in blank, as recorded in Joshua 18:1. Now, what would be set up for the Israelites but the tabernacle? So the tabernacle is set up where? Anybody remember? Shiloh. If you ever get a chance to go to Israel, if you don't see anything else, go to Shiloh. It is an Israeli national park. It's not covered over with a bunch of touristy stuff. You can walk right to the place. It looks like the place. Everything indicates this is the exact place where the tabernacle was set up. This is where Hannah prayed to have a son. This is where Samuel was brought to Eli. This is where Eli got the news that the Ark of the Covenant had been taken and his sons had been killed. All this history, it's right there in that place. And I just can't explain it to you, but when I was there, it was like this place impressed me almost as much as all the rest of everything I saw. I don't know why. Go to Shiloh, you get a chance. All right, we're on the back page. How about that? Who were they name-wise? Who was the first one? There's your script. Othniel, N-I-E-L. And he's the first judge. I can remember Othniel as the first judge because it sounds like oatmeal, and you have oatmeal first thing in the morning. And then there is, who's the next one? Ehud. I can remember Ehud because he's the left-handed dagger jabber. He was a left-handed guy, it says, and he killed Eglon, and he killed Eglon with a dagger that he hid under his garment and went in there and stabbed him, pushed that knife in so far, it went in up to the hilt, and Eglon was a big guy. Anyway, more details we can look at later. And then there's number three, Shamgar. And number four, Deborah, unique among the judges. God called this woman to judge. Number five, Gideon, also known as Jerubbaal, because he fought against Baal. Number six, Tola. Number seven, Jair. J-A-I-R. And you can look up these references. Pretty easy to find. And then there is Jephthah. Man, he's got a wild story. He's one of those guys that made a rash vow. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we come to him, but very interesting story. Some of these guys just get a couple of verses, and some of them have a couple chapters. Just depends on the circumstance and what's going on there. And then there is Ibzan and Elon. Not Elon Musk, but Elon nonetheless. I wonder if that's where his parents got his name. Number 11, Abdon. Number 12, Samson. Number 13, Eli. Now, you don't find... He's not in the book of Judges, but when you read 1 Samuel, it says Eli judged Israel. As a matter of fact, when you read 1 Samuel chapter 8, when Israel is asking for a king, you might catch in the English reading, depending on your translation, that they are saying, give us a king to judge us. In other words, when we've got issues, who do we take our issues to? We take them to the judge and they judge, or we take them to the king and the king will judge. And God was saying they want a king because they rejected me. And then Samuel and his sons, they were the last ones to be filling the office of judge in Israel in the sense that we're talking about with the book of Judges. All right, characterization of the time. That's my best Gomer Pyle impression without even trying to do it. And this we've already read, but let's go over it here. Hear the blank of the Lord. The angel of the Lord does what? He rebukes Israel that they have neither scoured the land of idolaters, haven't scoured away those idolaters, nor have they refused to make blank with them. Covenants, agreements. That's what the angel said. I told you not to do that. Don't let them stay here. Don't make covenants with them. He could have said, as Paul would later write through the Spirit, evil companions do what? They corrupt good morals. Don't allow that to happen. The way to keep that from happening is be careful of who your companions are. For this, the angel says he will not blank out their enemies. Not going to drive them out anymore. You want them out, you're going to have to fight them. But rather, they, your enemies, will become blank in their sides. Thorns in their sides. And that their gods will be a snare to them. And I'm here to tell you, you go over there and drive around. And I don't think they planted them for the tourists. But there are huge thorns everywhere. Here, you think of a thorn, you probably think, oh, I'll go out to a rose bush and it'll snag your clothes or maybe scratch your hand a little bit. Over there, you get a thorn, it's like a knife sticking in you. Those things are big. All right, the four-part cycle. Number one, rebellion. Rebellion. This is throughout Judges. Number two, retribution. God brings retribution, punishment, brings their enemies against them. Number three, what do you think comes after retribution? Repentance. Oh, you're punishing us. We'll be good. And number four, restoration. Restoration. Now, if I put a line five down there, what would be line five? Rebellion. We're back to rebellion. Then what would come after rebellion? Retribution, repentance. It's the cycle that just keeps repeating through Judges. And I put at the bottom, remember the name Israel. It's from Genesis 32, 24 to 32. Do you remember that story? Jacob is doing what? He's wrestling with an angel. And so the angel says, your name's not going to be Jacob anymore. It's going to be Israel. And Israel means he who wrestles or struggles with God. And that's such an appropriate name because that's what this nation has done and is still doing. Now ask me. No, don't ask me. Because everybody will take it wrong. I don't know about, not you guys, but a lot of people will take it wrong. And don't answer this too quickly. Are the Israelites the people of God? What's that? Well, I answer the question with a question. Who doesn't know where the Israelites came from? Anybody who knows history knows, well, God called Abraham. And he brought from Abraham, from one man, and him as good as dead. Because he was 75 years old when God called him. How old was Abraham when he finally had that boy? He was 100. What did Sarah do when the Lord said, I'm going to give you a child? She laughed. What does the name Isaac mean? He laughed. God got the last laugh. So, well, think about it. If you wanted to start a nation, would you start with an old couple who's barren? Probably not, but you're not God. God always does things that are unexpected. Is it Taco Bell that has that commercial? Totally unexpected. I can't do Scottish accents, but that's the way God works. I'm not going to pick some young guy. I'm going to pick this old guy who's faithful to me, and I'm going to call him so that he'll train up his children in the way they should. That's what he says about Abraham in Genesis. And then he says, I'm going to give you a son. And they wait and wait and wait, and nothing happens. So what do? Sarah says, we must be missing something. Why don't you take Hagar and have Hagar was her handmaid. Why don't you have a child by Hagar? So they have a child by Hagar. Who was that kid? That's Ishmael. Who came from Ishmael? Everything points to the idea that the Arab nations came from Ishmael. Isn't that interesting? What two peoples have constantly been at each other's throats ever since? Don't mess with God's plan. Wait. Wait, wait. If he made you a promise, he will fulfill it. And finally, Isaac comes. And from Isaac comes Jacob. From Jacob comes 12 sons. And Jacob's name was changed to he who struggles with God. His children become the nation of Israel. And that's the people that God has brought into the promised land. And that's the people that are rebelling and having to be punished, and then finally repenting after the punishment is too great and being restored. And after they're restored and they get comfortable for a while, they rebel again. God punishes them again. They repent again. They're restored again, over and over and over. Something that is said in the book of Judges, I believe four different times, is that there was no king. This is chapter 17, verse 6. In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And that's a problem in America today. I don't want to be one of these guys that keeps saying, back in my day. But the reality is that back in my day, even people who did not go by the Bible at least assented that the Bible is a good standard for morality. It was the absolute truth. Our Congress used to print Bible and portions of the Bible to pass out to congressmen so they would be able to study the Bible and make them more moral in their thinking as they were making laws for the nation. Our government used to provide New Testaments for our soldiers going into combat. This is the way that people used to think about the Bible. When did In God We Trust become our national motto? It was something the founding fathers would have believed, but it wasn't the founding fathers. It was much later. And then eventually we got to the point where we're saying, you know what? We need to teach evolution. We need to show our children that they did not come from God, but that they came from nature, as nature would wrestle with itself. And, you know, I read a quote today from Charlie Darwin, and I should have written it down, but he was saying something to the effect of, when we become a law unto ourselves, that's when the greatest evil is done. And I'm thinking, you're Charles Darwin. You're the guy who put forth this idea that natural selection. What's natural selection? Somebody tell me what natural selection is. Survival of the fittest. The stronger survive. If you're weak, you need to be called out, because we don't want weak people having children and passing on their weakness to the next generation. We need to get rid of the weak people. That's Charles Darwin. That's godless thinking. And that's what we're looking at right here. There was no mercy. There was no grace. This is a dark time in Israel's history. And the more we look into it, the more of that darkness you will see. Yes.
I think that's the whole point. That we're, you know, God's teaching us and showing us. It's a good for us to see now. And I just, and you talk about struggling with God, and you talk about the children of Israel and how they struggle or wrestle with God. And to me, you're talking about me, but I know me. And I wrestle and struggle and all of that. And now I'm like, wow, you know, and look at what happened to them. And, you know, I'm like, these are all lessons.
Right.
If he told you to flee, God can raise up. So even if it were completely devoid of God's word, God's word will still return to him, fruitful, and he will raise up someone somewhere, and there will be followers of God, whether we are following or not.
Absolutely. And so stay faithful. That's the message. We read Judges, and we think those people were pretty goofy. Well, how should that impact me, except to keep me from getting goofy too? Because I can get just as goofy as they were and think, oh, I'm better than them, I'm smarter than them, I'm more spiritual than them. But if I am not careful, I will have the same things happen to me that happened to them. That's why it's so important that we continue to meet with one another. That's why it's so important when you have friends that you spend time with, that those friends are either Christians or they at least share your same Christian godly values. That's why it's important that when you watch a movie or watch a TV show, you're watching something, and I'm not saying it's got to be from some, I'm just saying don't watch the stuff that's leading you towards the devil. Don't watch the stuff that makes you go, oh, that looks interesting. That's kind of like what the Israelites were led away into when they went into the land of the judges, and they saw the way those people worshiped, and it was so sensual and so appealing to the flesh. I'll say this, and I like to tell people this because it's just an eye-opening thing. James says, every good gift and every perfect gift comes down from the Father above, with whom there is no variableness and no turning of shadow. What does that mean? That means that everything you enjoy in this life, everything you enjoy, even things that are in and of themselves something you shouldn't be doing, but if you get pleasure from it, the only way you can sense pleasure is with the things God gave you to sense pleasure. You see a color with your eyes. Oh, it's a beautiful color. When's the last time you did that? It was a car or a garment of somebody's or a house, and the color pattern. Oh, that's beautiful. God gave you your eyes, and he gave you your ability to be pleased with aesthetics. Animals don't have that. You don't see a dog walking by and go, oh, hey, that's a pretty wall right there. Wonder if we could do that at our house. Dogs don't do that. They don't stop and, oh, smell this flower, unless you're going to eat it, maybe. When's the last time you held a kitten or held a puppy? When's the last time you had the pleasure of having a baby in your arms? Oh, man, that's all from God. You go to the movies and you hear music and the soundtrack. That's a cool soundtrack. What's your favorite soundtrack? Anybody? Lord of the Rings, you like that stuff? Music and Lord of the Rings, that's kind of dark and heavy stuff. Pirates of the Caribbean, oh, that's dark and heavy too. But it's got some cool cello in it. That's neat music. Hey, Little Mermaid. Get the soundtrack from Little Mermaid and listen to it. That's some good stuff. I'm just saying, when you hear something, when you see something, when you smell something, when you touch something, when you taste something, everything good comes from God. Don't allow yourself to be let off like the Israelites were in the days of the judges to seek out some kind of pleasure that is going to hurt you in the end. God has given us lots of pleasures that are good and wholesome and intended by Him for us to be enjoyed. That's why He put Adam and Eve in a garden full of good stuff. No mosquitoes. No snakes that would hurt you except for that one that talked to them. Talking snake, imagine that. I don't know if I'd be so afraid of snakes if I could talk to them. You know, step in the woods. Hey, all you snakes out there. Don't mean you any harm. But here I come. Don't bite me or I'll get you. Whatever. I'm just saying, think about it. Just think. Just use your head and think. That's a class for tonight. How do we get on to that from Judges? But anyway, I love it. I enjoy it. Thank you. I appreciate you all. Thank you for your patience. How you doing, Hunter? Good. Doing well. Thanks.